Seminar, Agelessness, Lecture 8. My universe, from my point of view, is an illusion subject to moment-by-moment change of my thoughts. My universe, from my point of view, is an illusion subject to moment-by-moment changes of my thought. All is now and ageless and timeless and constantly changing in the relative. All existence is an illusion, and I am aware of it. All thought is an is. All illusion is isness plus isness. Okay. My universe, from my point of view, is an illusion subject to moment-by-moment change of my thoughts. Every moment, we have new thoughts. Now, Lydia came here with some thoughts, and every moment they change, because every moment she's hearing new information, or not new information, just new input on old information, and coming up with new attitudes. When Lydia came here, she thought she was wonderful. She thought she was magnificent. She thought she was God's gift to the world, you know, of womanhood, of the genius that she is, and the magic lady that she is. That's what she thought. And she had that reconfirmed. Now she knows it. Now why does she know it? Because my universe, from my point of view, is an illusion subject to moment-by-moment change of my thoughts. Now, what thoughts has Lydia changed since she's been here with us? Ellen would say, oh my goodness, so many. Well, if there's so many, name one. What one thought has Lydia changed in her mind since she came here?
I like me.
Oh, I think Lydia liked herself.
I like me very much.
And I think Lydia liked herself very much. Go on.
So she hasn't changed anything.
No. What, Lydia, you want to tell us what you changed?
Yeah. It starts with A.
Well, say it.
Attitude.
Oh, you changed your attitude since you came?
Yeah.
Let's let Lydia tell us what she has changed since she has come here. All right, Miss Lydia?
What have I changed?
What have I changed?
I am aware that I am living in the now.
I am aware that I am living in the now.
Yes.
Yes. I'm repeating you for this.
That's it?
That's it.
Yes, that's it.
She is aware that she is living in the now. You know what that means? That means that she does not have a husband at home waiting for her. She does not have a daughter or a son. She does not have a life other than what she's living this moment by moment. Now, when she goes to Switzerland, not back, because she's never been there before. When she goes to Switzerland, she will probably go visiting different houses and say, hi. And people will say, well, mother, you know, auntie, grandma, or whatever. No grandchildren. Huh? So they won't say grandma, unless she doesn't know things. You know. And she has surprises there that she doesn't know about. But her world will be fresh and new. Now, can this be a possibility?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because it is a reality.
That's an easy out, say, because it is.
Because, no, I said because it's a reality.
Oh, what reality?
It is. There is really only now.
Oh, the reality is the now.
Yeah.
You see, you have to define that. Okay. So the reality is the now, and she is only living in the now. So if she is only living in the now, is she bound to be something?
No.
Is she destined to be something?
No.
Is she changing moment by moment?
Yeah.
In the now?
In the now, yeah.
What does it mean to change moment by moment in the now?
Every moment is new.
Every moment is new. Every now moment is new. Every now moment has never been lived before. Now, you can say, okay, well, how can it be a now moment if every moment is changing? Well, that's the point. Now, when Lydia arrives at the point in consciousness that the now is her reality and her totality, nothing else exists, it will never change. She will arrive at the point of total illumination, total awareness of that which she is. Now, will she, in that total illumination and total awareness, will she be aware of her previous family, her previous life, her previous world? No. Does she want to be aware of it? No. If she wants to be aware of it, she doesn't go probing into the now. Because the very fact that you probe into the now means that you're looking into your higher spiritual realization, your oneness as all, your divinity, your total divinity. Now, you see, Sai Baba in India. Sai Baba is supposed to be a very advanced master, very advanced person, and Sai Baba is very advanced. However, Sai Baba is not advanced, because Sai Baba still enjoys the game of playing with people. He still enjoys the game of playing with people and working with people on their spiritual life. Sai Baba still enjoys saying this to people. Ellen, what do you say to Sai Baba? You are
your God.
And what does Sai Baba say to the people?
I know it, and you pretend not to know it.
I know I am God,
yes.
And you are God too, but you pretend that you don't know that. Or rather than say you pretend, but you don't know that. I am God, thank you, that's true. But he should really say, if you can see me as God, then you must be God too.
Yeah.
But rather, he says, I am God, that's true. And you are God too, but you don't know it. That's all. And if he is God, how could he say that they are God too, but don't know it? How could he say that? That's a total oxymoron statement. It does not fit into the picture or the principle in any way. If you say to me, Herb, you're God, and I say, that's right, and I'm your reflection, you're God too. Isn't that wonderful? You're God? Isn't that wonderful? I don't say, you're God too, but you're so stupid, you don't know it. Now, I don't mean to knock Sai Baba. That's not my purpose. I'm just saying that phrase indicates where he is. Now, we look at Jesus and we say, wow, what a great teacher Jesus is. What a great master Jesus is. What a great deal he is. Well, now, why did he have to go through the crucifixion? He didn't, but why did he go through it? Because he's a showman. Jesus' entire ministry was a showman. If he were not a showman, his ministry would die like all the other messiahs who were on stage at the same time he was. When Jesus was a messiah, and not when he was, but at the moment that Jesus was living his life as a messiah, around him were hundreds of other messiahs. Messiahs were a dime a dozen. It's like Pentecostal preachers, you know. They're a dime a dozen. Like ministers of any church. They're a dime a dozen. They're everywhere. And they're doing good things. They're meeting the needs of people. People want what they have to say. They listen to what they have to say. And some of them are great showmen. Like Billy Graham and so forth. They're great showmen. They put on a tremendous show with a great auditorium. And they go to the presidents and they go to the leaders of all the countries. And they are highly respected as a spiritual leader. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now. They're showmen. Where are they leading people? They're leading people down the traditional path. The traditional path of believing in Jesus instead of believing in themselves. Now, is that a blessing to the world? That's none of our business. Where are we leading ourselves? Are we leading ourselves down the path of realization of the teachings of Jesus, where he said, it's done unto you according to your belief? He didn't say, follow me. He did say, follow me, when he said, follow me as the Christ. Follow me as the Christ consciousness into all peace. And he did say, if you want to follow me, if you want to follow this teaching, that means you give up all possession. The rich man giving up his money. You give up your possession of your parents, of your family. You give up these things. And it didn't really mean that. What it meant was you change your focus. You change your focus from your wealth, your riches, your family, and all these other things into the truth. And he said, I have not come to destroy the law and the prophets that you've got and hang on to it. But I've come to give you two new commandments which supersede all others, which go beyond all others. And what are those two commandments? Anybody know? I'm sorry, I cannot understand or hear one word that you're babbling over there.
Love the Lord with all your...
Love the Lord,
thy God
with
all your might,
all your heart, and all your soul, and all your being, and...
Love your neighbor like yourself.
Now, what does that mean? That means that he said God is in each one of us. He said, go to the Father within, and the Father will answer thee. He said, seek ye first the kingdom of God. And he said, the kingdom of God is within. So now, we've got this message from him. And what do? We go outwardly. We go outwardly, and we like to think in the outward form. We pray with our hands up. We seek outwardly. Now, that's okay. You understand me? That's okay. It's a kind of a foolish way to go, but it's okay. And if that pleases you, then go that way. But that's not where it is. It's within. When you meditate, do you meditate outside? Some people do. Or do you meditate within? When you introspect, do you introspect with God on cloud nine? Or do you introspect with God inside of you? Now, these are the things. My universe, from my point of view, is an illusion subject to moment-by-moment change of my thoughts. How often do we change our thoughts about ourselves? How often do we come into a new awareness of who we are? How often do we wake up to who we are? You see, with the standard religions, age is a venerable experience. Age is a desirable thing. The aged are wise and respected beings. In the teachings of Jesus, he pointed out things to the people in a very interesting way. He said, now is the acceptable time for my good. Now, he didn't say tomorrow. He didn't say to wait. He said now. And he said, do it now. And he said, if anything in the world disturbs you or is not harmonious with you, shake the dust of that experience off your feet and go on. And he also, by illustration and by example, he said, we are not here to be our brother's keeper. We are not here to heal the world. Physician, heal thyself. We are supposed to heal ourselves first, and once we heal ourselves, then we see all the world different. Moment by moment, we change and see the world different as we see ourselves different. Now, physician, heal thyself is a very powerful and a very magnificent statement, one which is not given the credit it should have, but this is where we are. Physician, heal thyself. Are you ready? Are you ready to be whole and perfect?
Yes.
Or are you ready? Or are you ready to have someone else heal you? You know? This is something we're working with. All is now and ageless and timeless and constantly changing in the relative. You see, all is now. It already exists. But it's ageless and timeless. It has no age, it has no time, it has no relativity, even though it's in the relative, where that's the only place time can exist. And time doesn't really exist in the relative, because it doesn't exist. But we created this existing. Now, we say if you tell a lie often enough and long enough, people will believe it. That doesn't make the lie true. If you tell a lie often enough and long enough, the people will believe it and follow it. That doesn't make the lie true. Hitler told his people in Germany that they were the master race and that they should get rid of anybody else who's not of the master race. Can you imagine the world covered with only Germans? With only people of the German persuasion of thinking? And only people who had the Hitler type of thinking? Wow, would that be an interesting world? Would that be an interesting place to be? It would be hell. And there would be no expansion of consciousness. There would be no awareness of going on. Parents would be, children would tattle on their parents for their thinking anything different than what the fatherland taught and sought. And of course, the Japanese had something similar to that going, but they were not quite as, sophisticated as Hitler had created for the people there. Now, Stalin, what did he do? He did much the same thing. Mussolini, he just tried to follow what the rest of the guys were doing. He was having a ball. He was made the king, the counselor, the boss, the god for all the Italians, and he loved it. And who did they have over in Spain? Franco? And what did he do? He was going the same route. But he missed the boat a number of times because he did not stand up and whip the people. And so he lost, which is what he should do. Now, if he had whipped the people would have loved it because they're masochists. They like that being told what to do and being told how to do it. The world loves this. They like the Billy Graham. They like the Billy Graham who says that God in heaven is waiting for you. And God in heaven has streets of gold waiting for those of you. And like the minister's wife who died, remember?
Yeah.
And the man who was going down to Florida with his wife and expecting his wife to come later, he sent her a telegram and he wrote the telegram with a mistake on it. So it went to this minister's wife who had just died. And the telegram said, "Dear, I've arrived, and we've made arrangements for you here now. And then, P.S., boy, is it hot down here." And you see, people believe those things. They believe those things. They believe that hell is hot. And really, all hell is confusion. Hell is just confusion. And when we are organized in our own understanding of who we are, I will want you always to hear what I say, but not take what I say to be against any other religion, any other philosophy, any other teaching, because I am not so knowledgeable of all these other teachings that I can tell you everything that they do. All I can tell you is that this is what we do. And we do this because this is what we understand what Jesus taught. Now, people say, "Herb, are you a Christian?" I say, no. I am not a Christian who believes that Jesus died for our sins and that we have to follow him and believe in him, turn our lives over to him. I don't believe that. I believe we have to find the Father within us, which is what Jesus pointed to. And Jesus pointed out that it's not he who is God for us. He's God for himself, and we're God for ourselves. He said, "Every man is God. Ye are gods, all of you." And the Old Testament rhymed the same thing. So this is not something new. So, you see, we want to live in this ageless consciousness, in this timeless consciousness, which is the now. And to live in the now, in this ageless, timeless consciousness, means that we judge no one. We do not say of anyone that this is the way to go, or this is the path to follow. I don't want you to follow my path. That's why I throw away all the books that I read. I take all the books that I read and dispose of them, because that was my step, my path. Your path might be reading my books, or might not. Your path might be listening to the divine within you. And the divine within you might tell you what to do. There is a spate of young people aged 3 to 10 back in the 50s who were very articulate. How about that? These young people, there were maybe about 10 of them, they were so articulate, they were so religious. Their parents got them up on the church platform to preach. A 3-year-old, 4, 5, 8, 10-year-old, each one of these people at different places around the country. And they would get up and preach. And they would preach the hell and damnation philosophy, or they would preach all the different types of things that you can imagine about religion. And they would teach this and preach this. And the people would fill the churches to hear this young, inspired being as he spoke from his heart, or she, there are two girls, as they spoke from their heart. And they would listen to them and they would, yes, yes, yes. But soon the fire burned out in these children and they became normal children and forgotten. Oh, they had their moment of fame, but they were normal and they were forgotten. Now, why is it they didn't retain this charismatic, enthusiastic ability to get out and speak before large audiences on these spiritual themes? Why didn't they keep it? Well, probably because they only had a little bit of the inspiration. And the inspiration came to them. You see, when the inspiration comes to us, and then we write out, go and tell everybody about it, then we get the feeling that we are finished, that we are the number one for everybody, and that we're the teacher for the world, and people respect us and love us, and that we've got it all. We've got it all. And that shuts the door inside of us of that spiritual illumination. Those kids were inspired. They didn't know this. They didn't read this. They could never have read in their short life and in their short reading span and in their lack of ability to read these things, or even be told about it. But they listened within their heart and they heard this message and they gave this message. It was interesting how it was a period of time, like a 10-year period, that they were doing their thing. Really amazing and really beautiful. Now, I tell you this from this point of view. You get inspired with your spiritual illumination. You get inspired with God Unlimited University of Healing. You get inspired with the philosophy that you're hearing. You get inspired with now, now, now. Everybody should know about now, you know. Have them read Eckhart Tolle. That'll tell them about now. And it'll confuse them just like it's confused us. But it's good. It's all true stuff. Everything they said is fantastic. But it's not the direction. The direction of now means that there is no otherness. We cannot write a book about now. Because if we were to write a book about now, then we would be writing a book about something that cannot be told in anything other than a point. A point in time, a point in beingness. It's a difficult thing. So, you, as you go out into your world and you spread your philosophy around, not the University of Healing or God Unlimited teachings, but your philosophy, what you have come to, if you have taken some of this philosophy and made it yours, that's great. That's super. But your philosophy, what do you believe? And then you go and you live it. That's great. But if you go and preach it, you're in trouble. You're in trouble Because people are going to say, why do you think that way? What makes you think that way? Go ahead. Describe to me the isness. Go ahead. Hey. You know, describe to me the allness. Describe to me now. You know, you ready to describe now? Yeah, that's a tough one, you know, even though it's just a three-letter word. How do you describe now? And you have to think about what that means. It means no other time. It means this instant, this instantaneous, and yet it's not an instant. What is this now? What is this timelessness? What is this beingness? I tell you, it's tough. But if you live it, it's easy. If you live it, it's easy. Every time you go to a lecture and you come home and your wife or husband says to you, well, dear, what did you hear? What did they talk about? Oh, all sorts of good stuff. I think the children have the best answer. They come home from school. Well, sweetheart, what did you learn in school today? Nothing. You know, what did the teacher talk about? Nothing. I thought you were learning about dinosaurs. Yeah, we learned all about dinosaurs, but well, what did you learn? Oh, nothing, you know. They keep it for themselves, and I mean that truly. They keep it for themselves because how do they describe the things that they have just recently taken into their heart as knowledge and understanding and wisdom to someone who hasn't gone through the experience with them? It's tough. So what did they do? What do children do? Children take out their pencil and paper and they draw the dinosaurs that they learned about. They draw the things that they learned about. They write it down in such a way. And we had one course for a number of years, and in this course it was our responsibility to learn 5 new words every day. Well, you quickly got rid of all the simple words. And then you had to start learning some more complex words. And we thought we were so smart. I had one boy, Jeffrey Etherington. He liked the name GE, the symbol for General Electric, you know. Jeffrey Etherington. And his father was a professor at the university, a very qualified professor of linguistics and everything. Brilliant man, and Jeffrey was brilliant. So he was my friend, and we'd walk to school together and we'd talk about words that we learned, and we would come up with words, and I'd say words and then he'd say what they meant, and then he'd say words and I had no idea what they meant. He used words that were just beyond the vocabulary of our grade level, but then he would explain them to me, and I got so excited about words. I got so excited about learning new words, learning grammar, having this vocabulary, and that we were the best in class. Actually, it was Jeffrey, but I tagged along because I was with his team. And we were the best in the class. It was just great. And ever since then, words have always been a source of magic and wonder for me. And the dictionary is my common companion because I want to know what other people think of that word, how other people describe it, how other people talk about it. And we would use words that were profound, and we would come up with the simplest meaning for that profound word, and the teacher would get after us and say, okay, now what's the meaning of this word? And we would give her the simple meaning. She says, no, that's not so. We'd say, yes, it is, because we looked it up. The simpler meaning was easier to remember, and so we would give the simple meaning, and the whole class learned, everybody learned, but that was my favorite time in school, was playing the word game, and it wasn't being sophisticated, it was just being interested. It wasn't like crossword puzzle where you just have a word and you don't always know what it means, but it was really interesting. Now, you see, all existence is an illusion, and I'm aware of it. Words are just an illusion. They're constantly changing in their meaning. They're constantly changing in everything they do, and it's just an illusion. But it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother you. Now, if I were to talk to you like a born-again Christian, you would say, wow, what language, you know, what ideas you have, what positive statements you have about Christianity and religion. Wow. And then I talk to you like a metaphysician. And a metaphysician talks to you about concepts and themes, not about principles but not about the dogmatism, that's the term, the dogmatism that religion basically has. And because I don't talk about the dogmatism, you say, oh, that's interesting. You mean my thoughts can bring me whatever experience I want in my life? You mean that Jesus said, as a man thinketh in his heart, so he is, that these are thoughts that we think in our heart, and then our body responds to this, and we can raise people from the dead by the very fact, no, we can't raise people from the dead. We can raise them from their sleep, you know? You see, so, oh, hey, that's interesting. You mean a dead person's really only sleeping? Of course. When you take an out-of-body journey, you're just sleeping. Your body's laying there. Nobody's home. You're taking that journey. Now, they could bury the body, and it wouldn't be dead. But it would be dead because you're not there. Now, you see, all of these things are fantastic ideas, and existence is an illusion I'm aware of. Are you aware of the existence of who you are? Are you aware of the illusion of who you are? Who are you? What is your reality? What is your divinity? What is your reality? Who really are you? Are you flesh and blood? Are you bones? Are you brains? Are you glands and fluids and all that stuff? No. Are you your car? You are the intelligence that drives your car, but you are not your car. And when your car ceases to be beneficial to you, you change to another car. And sometimes you don't change to another car. You just walk, you know? And when you walk, that's an interesting thing too. You have all sorts of new experiences, new wonders. Heinz told us about how he went for a walk, and what did he see? He saw all these beautiful plants. He saw all these beautiful trees. He saw all the things that he would miss if he were driving in the golf cart or going too fast. You see, we all do that. I tell all of you, when possible, walk. It's good for your body. It's good exercise for you. And you'd be surprised what you see. You'd be surprised at all the magic that goes on around here. The golf cart merely makes you alert to drive so you don't bump something or somebody. But when you walk, you see all sorts of things. You see the little creature that went across the road leaving its track. And then you see maybe about 100 little toe prints where the birds had walked across the roadway. And you think, why didn't they fly? And then you look out the window, and there are all these guinea hens gathered around my fountain, you know, gathered around my fish bowl there and enjoying a drink. And Rex is standing there looking at him saying, most interesting, you know. And the fish look up at these birds and they think, oh, hi, you're a new figure up there. Lovely. You see, we have the opportunity of getting the most out of life and staying young in the process if we will let ourselves do it. The more we use the motor vehicles, the more we use these things, the older we get. Because what is the first thing you want to do? Now, you have brought the green golf cart down here. How long did it stand there on the charger? Then maybe not at all. Then maybe it won't start now after you leave here because it was not given a charge. The battery was not charged. All we did was give the battery a kick. And so that was kind of silly, wasn't it? You may have to walk. And if you walk, you'll have a chance to see all sorts of things. But no, Ellen's not going to let you do that. Ellen's going to make you ride in the Windstar. And, well, then Sylvia will.
It's up there.
Oh, that's good. That's good. But the thing is, get the most out of life. Get your youthfulness sparkled up. And when you do, then everything is in divine order for you. If you don't, you just get older and older and older. What do older people do? They go slower and slower and slower. And they mentally go slower, they physically go slower, and they do not follow the rules. Now, Sylvia, what's the rule for good health? Living what kind of life?
Living an active
life. That's exactly the right words. Good health is living an active life. It's not living a dormant life. It's not living a life of riding in cars all the time or sitting at home in the chair and not going for a walk, not going out for a meditation walk, not going out to the waterfall and things like that. If you are not active, your body what?
Deteriorates.
It deteriorates. Now this is what's happening to Ingeborg. Her body is deteriorating because she's not active. Now you say, my God, of all the people here, she's the most active. She's out getting firewood. She's out doing this and she's out doing... No, she isn't. She is out saying, I have arthritis. I hurt. I got this problem. I got that problem. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. And as long as she keeps proclaiming that, no matter how active she is not going to be a healthy girl. You understand? You understand? Because that's what it's all about. You cannot have two masters. One master is her desire to bring in the firewood, and the other is being controlled by her body. Now, when you walk, Ingeborg, you walk straight as an arrow. You move your legs as though they know where to go. You don't start thinking, gee, if I fall down and break a hip, then I'm going to have a lot of trouble. I mean, don't think those things, because then you'll create those things for you. You create for yourself your ideal body now, and you start acting in your ideal body now, and you start living in your ideal body now, and you start moving in that way, and you stand tall. Oh, it's for me, I'm going up the hill with the dog, holding the leash, and my head is turned down, and all of a sudden I say, hey, wait a minute. And I bring my nose back up and my chest out, and I start walking, and hey, I got all sorts of energy. I have all sorts of energy. But the minute I'm bowed down behind the dog being towed by him, and the minute I stand up straight, then I say to Rex too, hey, walk with me, pal. Walk with me. And so he walks with me. He wants to do anything I want him to do to please me. He wants to do anything I want him to do to please me. Now listen to this. I say to myself, Rex would like to run free and be able to go and chase the rabbits and look here and look there and do everything. Rex would like to run free and do this. Rex would like to run free and do this. Does he really want to run free?
No.
He wants to be with me. He wants to be by my side. He wants to do everything with me. When the leash is coming, he loves it. Now, you say, well, he doesn't want to leave the monastery. Oh, that's another thing. He's got all you girls up there, and he's got all the possibilities of things falling on the floor, you know, and he's ready for treats wherever they're going to come from. But when he does come to the door, he bows, shows the proper obeisance, you know,
respect,
and then I put the leash on. I say, here's your favorite leash. And he looks and smiles and says, that's right. And then we walk out the door and we go where we want to go. And you see, when I let him off the leash and we go, he looks back and he says, which way are we going? And I point and I say, this way. And then he goes that way. But you see, the thing is, he wants to do what I want him to do. He wants to be where I want him to be. So I am doing him a favor by having him on the leash, because then we have that actual contact. And when we have the contact, he wants to pick up a stick and throw it up in the air and put it up like this here and say, look, Dad, see what I'm doing? Aren't we having fun? And then he wants to nose me, you know, and cuddle me and stick his nose into my side and say, come on, pet me a little bit while we're walking, you know. It's not too hard to do that, you know. And it's just, you see, I create him. I don't create him as a separate entity. I don't create him as a God on cloud nine that I have to worship. I don't create him as something that's not wanting to be in my presence and not wanting to be with me. I create him as my friend, as my companion, as my whatever I want to call him. You know? Huh? My buddy. Yeah, my pal. Yeah. And you see, this is what we want to learn to do with our body. Create our body as something that is enjoyable to be with us. As long as we live on this planet Earth, let's create our body young, vital, dynamic, alive, enthusiastic, and perfect in every way. And the way we do that is by having the proper thoughts about our body. All thought is an is. All thought is an is. It has no plus or minus aspects to it. All thought is an is. I like me, I don't like me. Those are two thoughts. And each is an is. And neither one is good or not good. The one I don't like me would certainly not be beneficial to me. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
The one I do like me is certainly beneficial to me. So that, presumably, is where I should have my consciousness, where I should have my thinking, where I should have everything that I am, everything that I believe, everything that I do. I like me. And you see, when I like me, then I put those causes in motion. All thought is an is. Isn't that a positive statement?
Mm-hmm.
And you see, it seems like it's way out. It seems difficult to comprehend. Because now, if I say, I think, and my thoughts are good. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think good thoughts. All thought, each thought I think is an is, and it's a nice is, thought is. Each thought I think is a good thought. Now that I can handle. Each thought I think is an is. Well, you see, what I want you to do is increase your vocabulary like Jeffrey Etherington and I did. Increase your vocabulary to include the word is.
Hey, that's a simple word.
Oh boy, but we have another meaning for it. Is means that which exists in its completion and wholeness right now. It's an is that exists in completion and wholeness right now. An is that which exists in completion and wholeness right now. It's nothing to be added to it, nothing to be polished on it. It is complete and whole right now. So that's what you are. That's what we are. We are this is that is complete and whole right now. And it's kind of nice. Now, do you want that is? Do you want that expression? All illusion is isness plus isness.
Yeah.
All illusion is isness plus isness. What does isness plus isness mean? Kind of a silly thing, isn't it? All illusion is isness plus isness. Well, isness is existence. And isness is existence. So, if I have all the existence in the universe in me now, wow, the world is my oyster. The world is anything I want. And Gertrude, when I say the world is my oyster, what's in the oyster? The pearl. The pearl. The ultimate. The prize. The pearl. The world is my oyster, and the world is my pearl, and I have all that little tiny pearl with all that it is, all the value that it is, all the magnificence of its creation, just from a little irritation in the oyster that makes the pearl. Isn't that something? But you see, actually, science talks in human terms. The pearl did not have an irritation to make the pearl. I mean, the oyster did not have an irritation to make the pearl. What did the oyster have? The oyster had an inspiration to make the pearl.
Oh, gosh.
And the inspiration the oyster had to make the pearl was to take the grain of sand that, heck, it gets grains of sand inside the oyster all the time. You know that. It goes right through the oyster beds. It's in the sand. Well, why should it have one grain of sand more irritating than another grain of sand? But it chose this perfect grain of sand. The grain of sand came along and said, hey, I'm a perfect grain of sand. Why don't you and I make beautiful music together? You know? And this perfect grain of sand and the oyster cooperated with the oyster's ability to make, what do you call this? The mother of pearl substance to make, isn't that it? Mother of pearl, and it makes the pearl. What a proper name for that to have. The oyster has mother of pearl on the inside of its shell, and then it makes the pearl from itself. Isn't that lovely? Now, sometimes the oyster is very ambitious, and it will make 8 or 10 pearls, maybe even more. But 8 or 10 is usually a good number for them. Now, each pearl is beautiful, but usually the pearls are made in the oyster, not always in a cluster. When they're in a cluster, they're not too beneficial. When they are separated, when they are surrounded by the oyster itself and blessed and loved as that special Christ child in the oyster, they are the most magnificent of pearls. And these are the pearls that go to make Milady's necklace, to make the chains of the pharaohs and the great kings who could afford these lovely things. You see, this is where you are. You are at the point now where, what are you doing with your life? We have the statement here, all illusion is isness plus isness, is mother of pearl plus the pearl. And not an irritation, but what?
An inspiration.
Isn't that a much more glorious term for it? Right, Gertrude?
Yes.
These are the things we want to do. These are the things we want to work with. These are the things we want to tell ourselves. These are the things we want to illumine ourselves with. You're getting a lot of interesting concepts which don't all make sense just yet, but they will. And as you go along with our lecture and our seminar, listen with an open heart and be like the mother of pearl oyster, ready to be inspired to make that pearl inside of you. Have a lovely day. Have a lovely evening. And remember that tomorrow we're going to start out with, my universe exists for my pleasure alone. Kind of nice. My pleasure alone. So think on these things and know that I love you. I love you.
I love you.